Test, 1, 2, test. Is this mic on? Welcome to tonight's program, The Mike Malloy Show. Thanks for tuning in. All sorts of information, of course, is now starting to cascade out regarding all sorts of tangential and direct, with tangential and direct connections to what has occurred in this country over the past decade under the guise of the war on terror, and how it never had to happen. I was watching Lawrence O'Donnell tonight on MSNBC, The Last Word, and an almost stunning presentation by O'Donnell using something that right-wingers are not familiar with, facts, footage from 4, 6, 8, 9 years ago of the Bush crime family spokesman making their excuses for their incompetence. And I think the reason O'Donnell brought it up is because there is a move afoot now. You've heard it for the past at least 48 hours. This phony-ass attempt by right-wingers, by Republicans, by these dirty, filthy, old white men who populate the House and the Senate, in their attempts to link the ending of Osama bin Laden with George Bush, as though George Bush had something to do with the success, if that's the right word you want, of the mission that Barack Obama ordered over the weekend. I think the details are coming out now in the New York Times today. The months and months and months of planning that went into this by a team that was determined to do what the Bush crime family had no interest in, because the Bush crime family didn't care that this country was attacked. That was simply a tactical move in order to get to their larger strategy, which was the ending of representative government in this country by any means necessary. Steal the votes, rig the elections, induce terror, clamp down on civil liberties, whatever it takes. It had nothing to do, though, with protecting the American people, finding bin Laden, or actually fighting a war on terror, if such a thing is even possible. But with their pigs in media, all the networks, all the cable channels, they were able to convince Americans to be stupid, be afraid, and be willing to allow all of this to happen. So it's coming out now, piece by piece, bit by bit. And anyone who's not paying attention and continues to vote for the corporatists, I don't care what party they're in, will deserve whatever is waiting after the next election. It's astonishing. We will we'll cover some of this. Our good friend Russ Baker over at whowhatwhy.com. Oh, by the way, let me just mention our sponsor for the first hour here, Carol Schenker, whose message, please read Political Ponerology to understand this mess we're in. Do it for love. Happy birthday, Bucko. There you go, Bucko, from Carol. Her message again, please read Political Ponerology to understand this mess we're in. Do it for love. Happy birthday, Bucko. Thank you, Carol. I'm still slogging through that. Oh, my God. I'm reading a new one by Ward Churchill. Yeah, Ward Churchill. The book's a couple of years old. You might want to get this. It is Pacifism as Pathology. Whoa. Pacifism as Pathology. Twelve questions about bin Laden's capture. This is at whowhatwhy.com, a website you should go to posted there today by Russ Baker. One, I'm not going to enumerate them all, but Russ enumerates the first one. Was Osama bin Laden intentionally shot? Weren't they all sleeping at 1 a.m. local time? And why couldn't the small number of people in the house have been immobilized with gas or stun technology? What was the internal policy on how to handle the ultimate hot potato? And what were the real preferences in terms of dead or alive? Why did they first tell us that he resisted and therefore had to be shot? Surely the SEALs and their commanders knew at the time what happened and communicated that well before Obama's speech. How did the story get screwed up initially? Why did they first tell us that bin Laden's party used a woman as a human shield when that was not true? Why exactly did his body have to be tossed into the sea? Why not say he was given a land burial, per Islamic law, in an undisclosed location, but do so in a location where his body could be exhumed for additional forensic work, if deemed necessary at a later date? What about the timing of this event? Coming on a Sunday night, on the heels of the imperial good feelings associated with the royal wedding, shortly after a number of other carefully considered media events, for example, the birth certificate release, all timed with the launching of Obama's reelection campaign. Can those who were tough on Bush apply the same standards and skepticism to the Obama administration, or is everything partisan and self-serving now? And do we, after all the years of lying, all of a sudden accept whatever the government says as true? Some thoughts to consider. And if you go to whowhatwhy.com, where Russ has this posted, you can comment there. He has a comment section. A couple other things. It's difficult, and I don't know that I should drift away from this topic. It's difficult to pull away from it right now because it has occupied this country for a decade. It has been the central theme of everything that has been done to us as a population, everything that has been done in our name to the rest of the world, the organizing principle of everything has been this ridiculous and phony war on terror. So the summary execution of Osama bin Laden deserves, on this program anyway, and on a lot of programs, obviously, it's being discussed. It's being discussed in different ways, for sure. I think there are a few people trying to sort through. I think we are trying on this program with a lot of input from listeners. The emails we've been getting are just have to be shared with you. I mean, I can't get this stuff from people and just read it, go, oh yeah, that's a good point. I have to share it with you. So that's what this program is about. Remember, this is not, you don't come here to get some kind of edification from the talk host. Oh no. It's a campfire, more or less. So I'm going to share some of these with you again tonight. And there are a couple other things that I desperately want to bring into the mix, which we will. Stay with us. I'm Mike Malloy. Just look around. A thousand years to build, and now it's coming down. If this were a movie, I'd say the acting's pretty bad. Everyone's stiff. Dialogue's so sad. We'll be right back.
not a soul. Drinking from the well.
21 past the hour. So Joe in Temecula, California, among scores of emails I've gotten, Joe writes, spontaneous celebrations erupted after the news broke that Osama bin Laden had been snuffed out. After all, bin Laden was the mastermind behind the 9/11 attacks that killed 2,985 people. Or was Khalid Sheikh Mohammed the 9/11 mastermind? After all, the FBI didn't list 9/11 as the reason why bin Laden was on the top 10 most wanted list. Oh, well, it doesn't matter. Let's just go with the official story that Osama bin Laden was responsible for the attacks that killed 2,985 innocent civilians. Let's just accept that for the moment. So now bin Laden is dead and the United States has been avenged. God bless the USA. Now consider what George W. Bush did. Bush ordered the bombing and invasion of Iraq in the form of shock and awe. Iraq did not attack us on 9/11. Iraq was not an imminent threat to the United States. Yet Bush still killed hundreds of thousands of innocent Iraqi civilians for no apparent reason. Let's say an elite squad of Iraqi fighters were assembled to carry out an operation to take out George W. Bush. Let's say they were successful and jubilant celebrations broke out all over Baghdad. How would we react? While we celebrate the death of one man, people in Iraq and Afghanistan still mourn the deaths of hundreds of thousands. Millions have been displaced from their homes and can never return. An entire generation of children has grown up knowing nothing but war, occupation, and death. And these chickens still have yet to come home to roost. Yeah. It's just, incomprehensible. What, the Bush crime family did. It's just incomprehensible. And it's incomprehensible how, for some reason, the American public just doesn't seem to be able to grasp or care about what Bush did in Iraq. Now, we have other things to do. Other things to do. What we did to Iraq is... come on, let's move along here. Nothing to see. But as Joe points out, the death and destruction of literally tens of thousands of innocent people who did nothing except have the misfortune of being a citizen of Iraq. All the pictures, we forget them as quickly as we can because we honestly can't handle what's presented to us. But the pictures that came out of Iraq in 2003 and 4 and 5 and 6 and 7, all those pictures of bloodied children, burned to death civilians, smashed infrastructure. For what? No, Joe's absolutely right. These chickens have yet to come home to roost, and I fear for myself and my country when they do. I truly, truly do. And for you people who believe, truly believe in a just God, you better prepare yourself for some real punishment. We'll be back. Before the hour. This hour is sponsored by Carol, who writes, please read Political Punerology to understand this mess we're in. Do it for love, and happy birthday, Bucko. Happy birthday indeed, Bucko. I, like Joe in Temecula, California, I with the focus once again being placed on Bin Laden, it brings the whole mess back, doesn't it? It brings everything back. This past decade was unlike any I think that I've lived through. I've lived through a lot of atrocities and war crimes committed by my government at various times in the past half century. Some of those war crimes are indictable and punishable. Well, all the war crimes are. Otherwise, they would not be called war crimes. But I don't think in the 50 years that I've been relatively conscious, I don't think I've seen a decade or lived through a decade like this. I lived through the Red Scare in this country, lived through the horror of what we were doing in Vietnam. Through the horror in Central America, just on and on and on. But I don't think I have ever experienced in my lifetime anything like the decade that the Bush crime family gave to the United States. You know, these sons of bitches almost literally destroyed the United States. And it's still a toss-up as to whether or not they didn't succeed with their policies, domestic and foreign. Not to focus it so much on us, because yes, we lost 3,000 people in this attack. But the damage and the death and the destruction that has been done just in this decade, just this decade. You can go back as far as you want, but just this decade. But as Joe pointed out in his email, we attack a country, Iraq, and destroy everything, including their ancient history, their infrastructure, their educational system, their power grid, their their self-sustainability. We destroy a country that was run by a dictator but had the highest level of education and health care in that part of the world. And we didn't do it for the reasons that George W. Bush and his criminals convinced the media, and the media in turn, like the pigs that they are, tried to convince the American public, and did pretty much, for the most part. Not all of us. We attacked Iraq and committed mass murder simply because George W. Bush and Dick Cheney could. This was part of Dick Cheney's energy plan. Energy policy. And not only did we destroy their past and their present, but we've destroyed their future. The entire country is saturated with depleted uranium. What we have done is invade the wombs of the women who live there. The ones who were 10 years old when we attacked. Those women are now approaching 20. And God forbid they should have a baby, because we have made sure that their wombs are radioactive. I mean, this is what this and all this goddamn USA, USA, USA garbage, because we go assassinate Osama bin Laden. This is madness. You understand that, don't you? It's madness. A couple of people tried to explain to me why these young people were cheering and singing the national anthem and acting like a bunch of goddamn goofs Sunday night when word got out that Osama bin Laden had been killed. Well, Mike, it's the only thing they've known. They were 10 years old when the trade towers were hit. They have been saturated with this war on terror stuff. Well, pity them for having been saturated with this kind of garbage to the point where these young Americans can't even think. They can't even separate fact from fantasy to take to the streets to celebrate the death of Osama bin Laden. Why aren't they taking to the streets to demand the arrest and trial of George W. Bush? How many of these people who are out there going USA, USA, USA last night, how many of them eventually are going to feel the lash of revenge? I mean, we are so ignorant in this country. We think something that happened 3 years ago is ancient. There are civilizations in the world that we persist in attacking whose histories go back millennia. Thousands of years, and they don't forget, ever. It's maddening. It's just maddening. Man. Tim and Annie in Deep Haven, Minnesota write, Mike, since 9/11, we have suspended the laws of cause and effect to an alternative reality that states we are the only aggrieved party in the world. 9/11 has brought about a climate of impunity, a corporate military state and secret self-dealing, and the subversion of the truth. The numb pathos of 9/11 created a new prison house of the mind. And now, with the supposed murder of bin Laden, the corporate media, and sadly many of the progressive talkers, both in radio and television, have continued to disrupt the media food chain in the truth seekers' search for 9/11 truth. The necessity of a diabolical other and the perpetual continuation of the endless heresy hunt is the real message in this illusory theater. Now the latest evildoer's evil is all being presented to us once again so as to justify America's command leadership of the so-called free world. The strange myopia of the left regarding 9/11 is the most interesting and does not bode well for our freedom and liberty. This is an obvious attempt to rewrite history and keep at bay any discussion of what really happened on September 11, 2001. For after all, it is un-American to engage in that discussion. The smart way to keep a people passive and obedient is to strictly limit the spectrum of acceptable opinion, but allow a very robust and lively debate within that spectrum, allowing ideology to very subtly, through message creep, trump rationality in the pursuit of truth. The domestic political fantasy life, as perpetuated by media of the last 9.5 years, continues to put us within a time loop of our own making. In this country, quite on its own, history seems to be running in reverse. And knowledge is not seen as a public good, but as something suspect, dubious, or even ungodly. As it was, for example, in Italy in 1633, when the church put Galileo on trial for his heretical view that the earth was in orbit around the sun. 9/11 occurred because the U.S. had lost control of the Iraq and Iranian oil reserves and the Caspian Basin oil and gas fields, and new boogeymen were needed to continue their craven pursuit of resource wars. Truth is liability. It can be championed only at a cost. Therefore, the victors of society with more to lose always have more to gain by avoiding truth. Henri Bergson said, "We must continue to think as a people of action and act as a people of thought." Tim and Annie in Minnesota. Ay, 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 ay. All right, we have a break here. Oh, by the way, next hour we're going to give away another $50 gift certificate gift card from Pro Flowers. I have to do something in on these nights to to reassert that there are nice things in the world. There are flowers. There are beautiful colors. There is the fun of giving somebody a gift. We'll do it next hour. Stay with us. This is from Cheryl in Burbank, California. By the way, this hour has been sponsored by Carol. Her message, please read Political Ponerology to understand this mess we're in. Do it for love. Happy birthday, Bucko. All right, Bucko. I'd like to meet Bucko. I really would. Happy birthday, Bucko. Cheryl writes, "Mike, decades ago I read the novel 1984. I don't remember a lot about the plot, but one plot thread always stuck with me. That is, the evil government was constantly rewriting history." Once a new history was announced, the beleaguered populace was so beaten down that they instantly accepted the new reality as true. No one questioned it. For years now, I felt that we Americans have been living in some bizarre version of that novel. Immediately after September 11th, I began to hear that Osama bin Laden was the mastermind behind the attacks. Then after several years of fruitless searching for him, I began to hear that it wasn't him after all. Khalid Sheikh Mohammed, the guy we waterboarded 184 times, was the mastermind. He's about to face a military tribunal and ultimately the death penalty for his confessed role. With the assassination of bin Laden on Sunday, I've been pouring through news accounts for 2 days, and he continues to be called the man behind September 11th, even though we're about to execute someone else for the crime. As far as I'm aware, the government has never released any evidence to back up their claims about bin Laden and any connection to 9/11. My local paper is the LA Times, and at the tail end of two long stories, I found these two unnerving comments. Quote, bin Laden said he knew 4 days in advance what was planned, though he admitted that the scale of death and destruction astonished him. End quote. LA Times, May 2nd, page A10. And then this. Quote, hours after the September 11 attacks, bin Laden sent a message to Hamid Mir, a Pakistani journalist who had interviewed him before. The message read, quote, I don't have any link to the U.S. attacks, but I support it. End quote. LA Times, same day, May 2nd, page A11. What is real, Cheryl writes, what is true? I have absolutely no idea. As an aside, during the supposed spontaneous demonstration outside the White House on Sunday night, was I the only one who noticed those college kids were all waving U.S. flags? Where did all the flags come from? Did those kids bring them from their dorm rooms? I don't think so. Who's standing there on Pennsylvania Avenue handing out flags? I repeat, what is real? What is true? Cheryl in Burbank. It's all illusion, trust me. Oh, my God. God, I hope we can get to the Canadian situation tonight. If we don't, we'll get there this week. But when we come back after the break, I want to share something with you that was on Rachel Maddow's program last week that I didn't see at the time because obviously we're doing this program. But it's just a mind-bending story. Mind-bending. So that and what else is our coming up? Oh, yeah, the gift card from ProFlowers, $50 gift card. You can get a lot of flowers from ProFlowers for $50. So I hope you'll stick around for that. What else? There was something else I just desperately wanted to bring up tonight, and it's just gone. It's gone. Sorry. Sorry. It's just... It's absolutely gone. I spent some of today watching the right-wingers just go nuts. Like I mentioned earlier tonight, this filthy lie about Bush... And bin Laden, about somehow Bush gave a tinker's damn. He didn't care. They had no interest in bin Laden. Bin Laden was just the boogeyman. Maybe that was one of the good things about, I know my language sucks, but maybe one of the good things about the assassination of Osama bin Laden is because Barack Obama now cannot use the boogeyman that George W. Bush used, nor can anyone in Barack Obama's administration. use the play the Bin Laden card ever. It's been cast aside. It's gone. The Bin Laden card has been taken from the deck and burned. And as we talked about last night, I wonder if if there's going to be a new terrorist out there that we all have to live in fear about. I don't think there's any one terrorist or freedom fighter or person who has just had enough of us. I think they are legion. Stick around. We'll be back. I'm Mike Malloy. Sponsored by Carm and Ernie. They have a message. We want to thank the Florida Citrus Commission and their spokeswoman, Anita Bryant, for their homophobic vitriol 34 years ago. It brought us together for the most phenomenal relationship. Signed, Carm and Ernie. Thanks, guys. I appreciate it very much. To digress for a moment, Amanda Marcotte, writing at Alternate, brings up this story. Last week, Rachel Maddow's program ran a story on Michigan politics that had some very distressing footage. And as a result, apparently, Rachel got an awful lot of mail about this. As you know, the new Republican governor of Michigan, the Stalinist Rick Snyder, signed a law that allows the state to dissolve local governments and hand them over to emergency managers. As far as I know, other than in a time of war, national emergency, what do you call it? Martial law. I've never heard of this happening, but it's happening in Michigan. The Michigan legislature gave this crazy bastard governor, the Stalinist governor, the right to do this, and he's doing it. It's a project that's been dubbed fiscal martial law. Now, as you know, we told you about the town in Michigan that has been taken over. What the hell is it? What's beside, it's not the thrust of the story. It's, it'll pop into my head in a second. But the latest victims were a group of schoolgirls that were arrested after being manhandled by police because they wanted to keep their current educational opportunities. Rachel's program ran the footage of police shoving, cuffing and pushing around teenage girls while sirens wailed over the girls' shouts and cries. The girls were arrested for holding a sit-in. to protest the closing of their school, the Katherine Ferguson Academy, which was established to serve students who are pregnant or in the process of mothering newborn babies. It was Benton Harbor, Michigan, that he seized. But Katherine Ferguson Academy, where girls who are pregnant or taking care of new babies can go and continue to get their education. The school provides daycare and parenting classes and focuses on getting students to college and giving them skills that help future self-sufficiency. Now, you would think, wouldn't you, that these filthy, hypocritical, rat bastard, pro-life my ass conservatives would not only be supporting this school, but demanding that every high school in the country provide these services to teenage mothers, right? After all, these girls did what anti-women's right to privacy people ask of them. They chose to have their babies. And now the very same conservatives that get all blubbery and Jesus talking about choosing life are working to shut down the educational opportunities of young women who did what these freaks demand. They had their babies. Now, the imminent shutdown of Katherine Ferguson Academy demonstrates the absolute emptiness and the filthy hypocrisy of Republican claims that they oppose reproductive rights because they value life. Bull. Instead, Republican policies are rooted in a sadistic desire to punish and control and to deprive women, especially young women, poor women, and women of color of any opportunities whatsoever. Lynn Paltrow, the executive director of the National Advocates for Pregnant Women, explained, quote, "I think the range of actions being taken against pregnant women reflects what has been underlying attacks on Roe v. Wade and abortion all along, which is a fundamental disrespect for pregnant women, regardless of what decisions they make. The combination of attacks that seek to deprive women not only of reproductive health care, but food through cuts to the WIC program, as well as education for pregnant teens, makes clear that it is pregnant women's personhood and not just their right to choose that is being targeted," end quote. Why, of course. You, truth seeker, nor I need to be told what the underlying reason is for denying a woman the right to privacy. Some people call it a right to choice. I call it a right to privacy. It's nobody's goddamn business if a woman finds herself pregnant, except the woman and anyone else she wants to include. Hopefully she would include the male who was instrumental in this pregnancy, a physician who has the knowledge and the tools to assist in whatever action she takes, and perhaps, maybe, if she chooses, an advisor, someone to work with her on a psychological / spiritual / whatever basis. But not these filthy, hypocritical, bastard Republican right-wingers. These creeps who get out in front of an abortion clinic and start crawling across the street. "Don't kill me, Mommy! Don't kill me, Mommy!" Remember those filthy pigs? And they claim to be Christian. They're about as Christian as a lump of coal. But I digress. Michigan Republicans are trying to put pregnant young women in a damned if you do, damned if you don't situation. If you don't want to have the baby, good luck to you trying to get an abortion in Michigan. The state already has been given an F by the National Abortion Rights League, especially for heavy restrictions on abortion access for young and low-income women. The state also has these long waiting periods, complete with false information about the risks attended to abortion, but some Republican legislators don't think women who want to terminate pregnancies are hassled enough. The women who don't want to terminate their pregnancies. State Senator David Robertson has introduced a bill that would require abortion clinics not only to do an ultrasound, but to provide hard copy pictures of the ultrasound to the patient before she's allowed to have her abortion. This adds to the expense of an abortion as well as creates time constraints that makes it harder for clinics to serve all their patients. Blah, blah, blah. It also treats pregnant women making difficult decisions like they're addle-minded morons, demonstrating further, if you need further demonstration, the amount of contempt the conservatives and mostly conservative males have for the personhood of pregnant women. They hate them. But just because they don't want you to say no to having a baby means that Michigan Republicans don't want you to say yes either, as the girls at Katherine Ferguson Academy have learned. Young women trying to parent and finish high school face insurmountable challenges. For one thing, being pregnant or mothering in high school is heavily stigmatized. And they face discrimination from school officials, teachers, and their fellow students. They also face a series of pragmatic problems. Balancing school and motherhood requires, child care. Something most high school students can't even begin to access or afford. More on this when we come back. Stick around. I'm Mike Malloy.
Gentle into that good night. Rage against the flying monkey right with Mike Malloy.
21 past the hour. The way conservatives treat young women who choose to go ahead and have their babies. Okay. We're talking about Katherine Ferguson Academy, that is a school for pregnant teenagers and teenagers who already have a baby, who chose not to have an abortion, who, in the privacy of their own decision-making process, decided, no, they would go ahead with the pregnancy. And recently, as reported on Rachel Maddow's program last week, these girls were arrested because they wanted to keep their current educational opportunities. Now, just because these girls want to... Oh, wait a minute. Michigan Republicans, just because they don't want you to say no to having a baby, that means that Michigan Republicans don't want you to say yes either. And that's what the girls at Katherine Ferguson School have learned. Young women trying to parent finish high school face often insurmountable challenges. I'm reading from Amanda Marcotte at alternet.org. For one thing, being pregnant or mothering in high school is heavily stigmatized, and they face discrimination from school officials, teachers, and their fellow students. They also face a series of pragmatic problems. Balancing school and motherhood requires child care, something most high school students can't even begin to access or afford. Being a parent requires money, too. Trying to balance work, parenting, and school proves too much for many young mothers. Fewer than half of teenage mothers go on to complete high school. Separate schools for teenage mothers draw criticism from people on the left as well as the right. Liberal critics say that teenage mothers should be integrated into their regular high schools, and the services offered at specialty schools should be available at ordinary high schools. Now, while these critics have a point, the cold fact of the matter is that as long as services for teenage mothers are not integrated into regular schools, places like Katherine Ferguson Academy serve a role. This particular school has a 90% graduation rate, more than twice the national average for teenage mothers. More importantly, the girls themselves cherish the school, which is why they put their bodies on the line in order to save it. Governor Snyder claims to be firmly pro-life, his words. But his decisions that led to multiple young mothers getting arrested because they want a better life for themselves and their small children shows he's anything but pro-life. He and other Republicans who oppose reproductive rights are better understood as anti-choice and anti-woman. Their stance isn't pro-fetus, it's pro-punishment. If you get pregnant outside of their very narrow parameters of what's acceptable, middle class, married, white, they simply want you to suffer. If your decision is to terminate the pregnancy, they will make you suffer. But as the girls at Katherine Ferguson Academy are learning, if you choose to have a baby, you will also be made to suffer. You may find yourself hauled away in handcuffs if you dare suggest you deserve to have something as simple as a high school education. The point of all this is the fact that the attempts are being made to close the school. And the girls were arrested for holding a sit-in to protest the closing of the school. Jesus Christ, I hate these people. I can't even put it into words. And worse, I have nothing but utter and absolute contempt and disrespect for the people who actually vote for a piece of human waste like Rick Snyder. How dare you? How dare you cast a vote that is so blatantly anti-life, anti-compassion, anti-rule of law, anti-justice, anti-moral, anti-ethical, you scum suckers? How do you vote for someone like a Rick Snyder? What was it that really strummed your heartstrings and that he said that made you want to go into a voting booth and say, "Oh yes, Rick, lead on, brother, lead on"? What was it? What did he say? Filthy devils. Let's take a break. Is it time for a break? We'll be right back.
C-SPAN, so you don't have to. It's more Mike Malloy.
25 before the hour, and this hour is sponsored by Carm and Ernie. And the message that comes with the sponsorship, we want to thank the Florida Citrus Commission and their spokeswoman, Anita Bryant, for their homophobic vitriol 34 years ago. It brought us together for the most phenomenal relationship. Signed, Carmen Ernie. Best wishes and all of that stuff to Carm and Ernie. If you were listening last night, Ernie called in because we missed the proper hour. So Carm is listening tonight, I hope. We appreciate it very much. Okay, as promised, I have before me here permission from proflowers.com to give away another $50 gift card. Ta-da! And when you deal with ProFlowers, I don't know. We're running commercials here, endorsements that I've put out there for all kinds of stuff for $19.99 and an extra $10 and you get this. Well, this is $50. Now, the gift card is good, clear until December 31st this year. So you don't have to use it this weekend or next weekend or the weekend after that. Use it whenever you want to. It'll be mailed to you. So what we're going to do is what we did last night. Just very simply, take the seventh caller. Kathy will click in and say, you're number one, you're number two, you're number three, until she gets to the seventh caller. So if you want to give it a shot, the number is 877-996-2556. 877-996-2556. All you have to do is just dial in, and Kathy will let you know. $50 gift certificate to ProFlowers. I've got something here that I'm kind of curious about. This is from legitgov.org. That's the Citizens for Legitimate Government. They've been around. That website's been around for a long time. I have used an awful lot of material from their website. They're talking about seizing, as in grasping, taking control of Washington, D.C. on September 10th at noon. September 10th coming. And they put out this, I don't know what it is. You can go to their website, legitgov, L-E-G-I-T-G-O-V, legitgov.org. Why seize D.C.? Endless illegal, murderous, and bankrupting war abroad. Endless brutal and bankrupting attacks on the vast majority at home. This is what we protest. 10 years ago, with the illegitimate installation of Bush as so-called president, Citizens for Legitimate Government made it its mission to expose the coup and to oppose the Bush occupation of the White House. We predicted at the time that the installation of Bush was merely the precursor to an era of illegal and undemocratic undertakings on the part of the U.S. government, policies that had begun at home and that would extend across the globe. Unfortunately, we were right. And we were right to say that this era would not and has not ended with Obama. In fact, it continues, unabated and gaining in intensity. In 2008, we witnessed a supposed change of guard with the election of Barack Obama. But even before the election took place, we suggested that Obama, rather than being an agent for change, was in fact a cleverly constructed mirage to enable the financial, corporate, and military oligarchy to continue on the same course. In fact, to do so without the degree of opposition that was building to the Bush regime. What we have witnessed is not change you can believe in, but where Obama and most Democrats in Congress are concerned, belief you can change. From Bush to Obama, we have seen not a change in policies, not a reversal, not even a failing to change course, but the exact opposite, a determined continuation, extension, and increase of the very same policies. Rather, than an end to imperial wars. We have witnessed the increase in scope and the extension of war into other countries. Rather than two wars, we now have four. Rather than policies favoring Main Street as promised, we have witnessed the unprecedented transfer of wealth into the coffers of the banks, the corporations, and the military contractors. We have seen record corporate profits while social misery for the working classes continues to rise, with unemployment not seen since the Great Depression and record home foreclosures. We now have austerity imposed on the vast majority, while those who caused the financial crisis with wars, bailouts, and corruption pay little or no taxes and enjoy record profits. Instead of restoring civil liberties, we have seen their further erosion with the extension of the Patriot Act, the increase of surveillance on the web, and a declaration by the president of the right to assassinate even American citizens without any legal sanction whatsoever. Indefinite detentions have not only continued under Obama, but he has also made sure that proven innocence is no cause for release. This is but a short summary of the reasons to seize D.C. How to seize D.C.? We protest, quote, peacefully, end quote, though not passively. We do not accept marching orders. This is how we protest. For 10 years, we have witnessed the absolute formalization of protests, the seeking of permits, the placing in quarantine zones, the appropriation of free speech, and the pro forma right to dissent treated as a purely formal and meaningless expression. We say enough. We need no permission to free speech or the right of assembly. We seek no one's permission and will not have our protests cordoned off from and made irrelevant to the functioning of a murderous and tyrannical oligarchy. We will not be corralled or controlled. Our protest is a seizure of Washington, D.C., by which we mean an attempt to seize the attention of the city and the nation so that its policies of seize and destroy may end. More details on the protest schedule to follow soon. All right, this is 4 months out, right? June, July, August, September 10th, 4 months from now. And as more of the plans are developed, I'll do my best to let you know. And in the meantime, if you, what is this called, Kismet or Serendipity? I just started reading the book. I mentioned Ward Churchill. The book, Pacifism as Pathology. It's a real challenge. This book is a challenge. The introduction is a challenge. I don't mean a challenge in density like political ponerology is a challenge. I mean it's a challenge to what liberals and progressives, for the most part, including everybody from, everybody from academics to Dr. King to Gandhi, just the whole spectrum of what passive resistance means, A, B, what it has or has not accomplished, and C, an alternative. So if you're, you know, the least bit interested in this legitgov.org message about seizing Washington, D.C., and you want, coincidentally, you call it a primer or a primer? Primer? Primer. On action that should be taken. I'm thinking of my friend a friend. I've never met him, but we have a internet relationship like I have a lot of people, email relationship. The Hopi, you know who you are, with the M50. This is a book, pal, that you ought to read. It really is. I'm about halfway through it. But just keep thinking about this. Seize D.C., September 10th, 2011. In the meantime, you might go to your friendly local bookstore and get a copy of Ward Churchill's book, Pacifism as Pathology. We'll be right back.
Right from the left, it's More Mike Malloy.
10 before the hour. This hour is sponsored by Carm and Ernie. And thanks a lot, guys. We appreciate it. The message, we want to thank the Florida Citrus Commission and their spokeswoman, Anita Bryant, for their homophobic vitriol 34 years ago. It brought us together for the most phenomenal relationship. Carm and Ernie. Where was it? Ernie called in last night. Where was he said he lived? Ant Hill, New Mexico or something. I don't know. A mound, a dirt mound, New Mexico. But they also have a place in Midtown or Lower Manhattan. So that's the redeeming quality. What was the town he said? It just cracked me up. I don't know why, but it did. Anyway, thanks, Carmen, Ernie. I appreciate it. Coming up next hour, where am I? Here I am. I'm going to continue some more of the discussion about the execution of Osama bin Laden. A couple more emails to share with you. One from our good friend AJ, the Music Factory in upstate New York. What else do I got? Just too much. Well, I do want you to stick around for the next hour because we're going to revisit that subject and we'll probably revisit it quite a bit this week. The Zeitgeist movement. Are you familiar with that? Did you see the movie Zeitgeist? And then they had. They had another one. What was the second one? Bob Alexander turned me on to those movies. Yeah, Zeitgeist, the movie, that was the one, the documentary from about 4 years ago, Peter Joseph. It asserts three main ideas, including the Christ myth theory, also about the September 11 attacks. But TMZ, or TZM, the Zeitgeist Movement, yes, of course they have a website. You haven't been there? It's very interesting. The Zeitgeist Movement.com. got an email from them. On May 1st, 2011, President Barack Obama appeared on national television with the spontaneous announcement that Osama bin Laden, the purported organizer of the tragic events of September 11, 2001, was killed by military force in Pakistan. Within moments, a media blitz ran across virtually all television networks in what could only be described as a grotesque, celebratory display, reflective of a level of emotional immaturity that borders on cultural psychosis. Depictions of people running through the streets of New York and Washington, chanting jingoistic American slogans, waving their flags like the members of some cult, praising the death of another human being, reveals yet another layer of the sickness we call modern society. It is not the scope of this response to address the political usage of such an event or to illuminate the staged orchestration of how public perception was to be controlled by the mainstream media and the United States government. Rather, the point of an article at their website is to express the gross irrationality apparent and how our culture becomes so easily fixed and emotionally charged with respect to surface symbology rather than true root problems, solutions, or rational considerations of circumstance. The first and most obvious point is that the death of Osama bin Laden means nothing when it comes to the problem of international terrorism. His death simply serves as catharsis for a culture that has a neurotic fixation on revenge and retribution. The very fact that the government, which from a psychological standpoint has always served as a paternal figure for its citizens, the government reinforces the idea that murdering people is a solution to anything, should be enough for most of us to take pause and consider the quality of the values coming out of the zeitgeist itself. And it goes on, and I'd suggest, I realize I've got a lot of suggestions tonight, but if you go to their website, the zeitgeistmovement.com, thezeitgeistmovement.com. And check it out. A grotesque, celebratory display reflective of a level of emotional immaturity that borders on cultural psychosis. Well, I don't think borders on quite gets it, Peter, but good start. All right, we'll be back after the break. Stick around. I'm Mike Malloy. This hour is sponsored by Sue Doerr. Sue. Hey, Sue. Thank you, Sue. Her message, please support your local food bank. A couple of cans, a couple of hours of your time will be appreciated. It would indeed. Our sponsor tonight, our third hour sponsor, Sue Doerr. Thank you, Sue. I'm still, to go back over a little bit of what we were talking about earlier this evening, it's still just, a mishmash of stories and reports and, you know, already the mythology about this operation to murder, kill Obama, or Osama bin Laden, this mission, the reports, the stories, the mythology, the catechism, whatever it is developing now. Was he shot once in the head, twice in the head? Was he cowering in a corner? Apparently, a couple of news organizations are reporting that he was unarmed when he was executed. And the question is, why wasn't he taken alive? Who knows? Do you think he was unarmed? What about the reports from years ago that he had ordered his lieutenants to kill him if it looked as though he were going to be taken alive? Who knows? One thing that we do know, because there is an audio record of it, apparently. I don't have it. I don't know that you've heard it. But the record is there, according to White House reports. The team that was sent in to do the kill, I can't believe I'm talking this way. The team that was sent in to do the clean kill, if possible, had a code word that they were to pass on back up the chain of command, I guess through their communications equipment, obviously. They had a code word to indicate success. That code word, of course, like we mentioned earlier this evening, was Geronimo. I mean, you got to think about that for a minute, Geronimo. You know, another person who years ago was designated a terrorist by white people in this country. And I just wonder if people think when they come up with these code words and operational names and you know, like Operation Iraq Liberation turns out to be the word oil, acronym for oil. Who comes up with it? Geronimo? Really? How about just, we got him. He's dead. Brain splattered on the wall. You know, what is it, Geronimo? I mean, I mean, it's their clean kill. Certainly not mine. Whoever set this up. Whoever worked out the tactics, the logistics of the attack and what was to happen and who was to say what and so on and so forth. And apparently the kill team person who was designated to shout the code word, I don't know, he must be religious, right? Because he prefaced Geronimo, and he said Geronimo three times. I don't know, Geronimo, Geronimo, Geronimo. I guess that's the adrenaline. I don't know. But he prefaced it with, for God and country? Really? For God and country? Geronimo, Geronimo, Geronimo. For God and country. And I don't know. If you're religious, of course, the first question, obviously, is who's God? Which one? The Jewish God, the Christian God, certainly not the Muslim God, I guess, the Hindu God. How about Shinto? Buddhists don't have a God. Do they? No, they don't have a God. Who? I mean, Celtic? Well, they don't either. Who's what God? Why God? I don't get that. I really, for God and country, Geronimo, 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 for God. What is the implication that God took the evening off somehow he got word that there was going to be, well, if all the praying was as Biden was chanting his rosary or something during this operation. Is that true? I mean, is that stuff true? Praying the rosary? God and death and murder and mayhem and slaughter and butchery and clean kills and God and God and God and pray to the, it was Biden praying to the Virgin Mary, Saint Joseph, Saint Christopher, who? I mean, what the hell? Really, what the hell? So all the religious insanity. Does anyone, you know, just like the people that say the teabaggers are not racist. Oh, for Christ's sake. That's like saying water's not wet. Of course they're racist. Like saying that this war against Terra is not just saturated with God stuff. Of course it is. It's the Crusades Redux. Or ongoing, or something. I mean, you know, all this God, the suicide bombers kill for Allah, the Americans kill for God. Does anybody think that this is a little bit sick? No, let me rephrase it. Does anyone think this is massively insane? We're killing for God now. For God and country! Geronimo. For God and country. And to pick the name Geronimo, that is almost hysterically inappropriate. Wouldn't you think? Geronimo. I don't know. I will admit that I don't know anything about any of this stuff. I really don't. What do any of us know about what really precipitated, or not precipitated, but what really facilitated the attacks on this country 10 years ago. Anybody ever know? You think you'll know? Huh? You think it's just the way Bush presented it? Huh? Geronimo. Apache. Fought against the U.S. because the Americans were stealing their land, the Apache land. For several decades, I guess, he was worse to the United States than bin Laden, don't you think? Geronimo. For God and country. There's real madness afoot in this country, isn't there? I mean, just total insanity afoot. Geronimo, for God and country. And splatter this guy's brains all over the wall. I wonder if it's true. I wonder if he was, I don't even know that the networks or any of the cable, broadcast networks or cable networks reported this. I just got an email that said it's being reported by ABC, CBS, CNN, somebody, that or all of the above, Osama was just cowering in a corner and he was executed. He didn't have a weapon. You'd think, wouldn't you think that capturing him alive and taking him someplace and then questioning him one way or the other and getting all the information, would that not have been more valuable? Or... No, I'm just kidding.
Paranoia strikes deep into your life, it will creep. It starts when you're always afraid. Step out of line, the man come and take you away. We better stop. Hey, what's that sound? Everybody look what's going. We better stop. Hey.
your day screaming with Mike Malloy.
21 past the hour. For God and Country, Geronimo, Geronimo, Geronimo. Also, we are learning that the CIA, State Department, Defense Department, National Archives, somebody, Smithsonian Institute, somebody had Bin Laden's DNA on file. So they could, I believe I heard that some brain tissue, Osama Bin Laden brain tissue was compared, well, they compared it immediately. I thought it took a while for a DNA comparison. I thought it had to be done in a lab. I thought DNA testing or comparison, I don't know. I just thought this. And I don't watch the crime shows on television, so I don't know where this came from. Maybe it came from reading the science section in the New York Times or something from the Innocence Project. I have no idea. You know how your head fills up with stuff. You don't know where in the hell you got it. But I've heard that DNA testing takes more than, you know, somebody on a kill team swabbing the wall to get some brain tissue off and then comparing it on what? With what? But, you know, that's how it's being reported to us. Huh? Maybe it was on the U.S. naval vessel where Osama bin Laden's body was taken. Maybe they had worked all this out. I mean, you know, planning is planning, right? So maybe the idea was on board this naval vessel, U.S. naval vessel, they had the DNA samples there so that when they showed up with his corpse and the brain swab or the brain mush, you know, that either came out of his head or his eye socket or off the wall, you know, you never know. You don't know these things. They could immediately test it. And I wonder if they gave him the at-sea burial before they had the results from the DNA test. And I mean, you see how this works out, right? You see what happens. Now, all this could be avoided for someone like me. Could be very easily avoided, very simply. Oh, they killed Osama bin Laden. Oh, well, that's good. USA, USA, USA. That's good. We're number one. We're number one. We're number one. Well, I'm glad they killed him. He's the one that organized and executed the attack on this country 10 years ago, right? Wasn't it him? No, it wasn't him. That was Khalid Sheikh Mohammed. I don't know anymore. I've been told, wait a second. No, it was, let's see, Osama bin Laden. He's the one in the videos with the automatic weapon and the desert clothes on, right? Or no. You don't do that. Here's what you do if you want to retain your equilibrium. These days, you just, whatever is put out there, accept it. Don't resist. Why resist? Why question? I mean, the people who understand how these things work are providing us with the information that we need in order to maintain our equilibrium and get on with the business of being an unemployed American who doesn't know where health insurance is going to come from and yada, yada, yada. The important thing for all of us to focus on is that we are told the truth by our media and our government. They have no reason to tell us anything but the truth, whether it is Bill Clinton or George Bush or Dick Cheney or Barack Obama. The truth is the truth is the truth. And the truth is, the world's number one terrorist was summarily executed in Abbottabad. That's interesting. Named after a British person during the British Raj, something like that. No. Don't go so deep. Don't go so deep. That's the problem. We try to go deep. There are people out there who go, wait a second. DNA? No. Don't. Just let it go. Let it go. if we are told DNA samples were compared and, yep, by God, that's Barack Obama's brain tissue or flesh or, I don't know, eyeball, smeck, whatever it is, you know, it tests and everything is tested and everything's cool. Now, float him off, give him a burial, and that's it, right? And notify media and notify the press, and everything's packaged up, and we can move on. Wouldn't this be the best way? And don't listen to this stuff about Geronimo, forgotten country. That's just, we don't even know if that really happened. You know?
Ready for a liberal helping of truth? It's More Mike Malloy.
25 before the hour. This hour is sponsored by Sue Dore. Her message, please support your local food bank. A couple of cans, a couple of dollars, a couple of hours of your time will be appreciated. Leland in Los Angeles sent an email last night, actually very early this morning. He writes, Mike, hearing your audience's input has made me feel less alone. I'm not necessarily insane. With Google within arm's reach, all questions have become, in a sense, rhetorical. Nonetheless, perpetual war for perpetual peace. I was trying to think of the author of that last night. That's why Leland wrote. Was a compilation of essays edited by Harry Elmer Barnes. It was a zenith point of proper American revisionism. I discovered the book in the depths of my John Birch Society libertarianism days. I'm just now remembering that Gore Vidal lifted the title 10 years ago, and that might be the book you alluded to. It is. What very few people know is that the Harry Elmer Barnes book lists every military skirmish the U.S. has engaged in from the Revolutionary War to World War II, while Gore Vidal's book lists every skirmish from World War II to the time of its writing. It's quite the list when combined. If memory serves, never did two whole years go by without it being open season on one people or another. Leland in Los Angeles. David Sirota was writing someplace yesterday. I don't know. Somebody sent it to me. But among other things, he points out that for decades we have held in contempt those who actively celebrate death. He says, when we've seen video footage of foreigners cheering terrorist attacks against America, we've ignored their insistence that they are celebrating merely because we have occupied their nations and killed their people. Instead, we have been rightly disgusted, not only because they are lauding the death of our innocents, but because, more fundamentally, they are celebrating death itself. But in the years since 9/11, we have begun vaguely mimicking those we say we despise, sometimes celebrating bloodshed against those we see as bad guys just as vigorously as our enemies celebrate bloodshed against innocent Americans. They, deem as bad guys. Indeed, an America that once carefully refrained from flaunting gruesome pictures of our victims for fear of engaging in ugly death euphoria now ogles pictures of Uday and Qusay's corpses. Saddam Hussein's sons rejoices over images of Hussein's hanging and throws a party at news that bin Laden was shot in the head. And this is bin Laden's lamentable victory. He has changed America's psyche from one that saw violence as a regrettable, if sometimes necessary, act, into one that finds orgasmic euphoria in news of bloodshed. In other words, he's helping drag us down into his sick nihilism by making us like too many other bellicose societies in history, the ones that aggressively cheer on killing, as long as it's the bad guy that's being killed. Again, this isn't in any way to equate Americans who cheer on bin Laden's death with, say, those who cheered after 9/11. But it is to say that our reaction to the news last night should be the kind often exhibited by victims' families at a perpetrator's lethal injection, a reaction typically marked by both muted relief but also by sadness over the fact that the perpetrator's innocent victims are gone forever, the fact that the perpetrator's death cannot change the past, and the fact that our world continues to produce such monstrous perpetrators in the first place. When we lose the sadness part, when all we do is happily scream USA, USA, USA at news, as news of yet another killing, in a now unending back-and-forth war, it's a sign that we may be inadvertently letting the monsters win. Well, the other thing, too, and this is David Sirota wrote that the other day. The other thing, too, is that we, and I guess they, whoever the they happens to be, don't consider the ripple aspects of random killings, terrorist activities, and the terrorism, of course. I agree with Dr. Martin Luther King, who 45 years ago wrote that his country had become the largest perpetrator of terrorism, I'm paraphrasing, of course, on Earth. It's true. I mean, if you think about how far we have traveled across the globe, our military machine, how far, and our civilian machine has sent the military machine thousands of miles away to different countries to commit butchery, to commit wholesale slaughter of innocent people. You know, cluster bombs and napalm and Agent Orange and depleted uranium. I mean, Jesus Christ, come on, folks. Is there any way possible to get some kind of perspective here? Or is it absolutely necessary, and I believe it probably is, to completely close our minds to the hideous and gruesome atrocities that we perpetrate on other people in order to take to the streets and half drunk on either booze or adrenaline and celebrate the headshot of some miserable son of a bitch whose death will mean nothing, absolutely nothing in the long run to any of this? And I refer to him as a miserable son of a bitch, but don't forget what he was demanding and who created him, you know, who fished him out of anonymity and said, here, we're going to provide you with Stinger missiles and all sorts of weaponry so you can butcher Russians. You know, when you stare too deeply into the abyss begins to stare deeply into you, and therein lies madness, chaos, upset stomach, headache, what? I don't know. I don't get it. I don't get it. Hey, Mike, strange last night. Strange night last night is referring to Sunday night. I saw our president, who has so much been the object of scorn, ridicule, and shameless fabrication, become a hero within a tenth of a second. Remember Whiplash? Well, I had a hell of a case of it around 11:30 p.m. One moment I was in one reality, the next moment I was thrown into an entirely different one. In the hour or two after the news broke, things got even more emotionally complex. The spontaneous celebrations that ensued brought to mind the discomfort I felt when the flags broke out in a huge way 10 years ago. As those years went by, my discomfort turned to disgust at the chauvinism. I became sickened by how the Red Menace would use the American flag and the whole of the government as propaganda tools to further its immoral agenda. Even 3 years into the presidency of a man from the other party, there seemed to be no end in sight to their lies, persistent attacks, and hold on power. I finally accepted all of it as the way things were simply going to be forever, like smog in a dirty city. So it's not that I'm unaware of the line that was being ridden last night, the line between justifiable jubilation and what a rather erudite friend of mine calls triumphalism. It's not that I'm oblivious to the fact that last night the media once again managed to, in record time, to get in front of the camera, editorializing like crazy and making itself part of the story. It's not that I'm deeply disturbed by the gloating and the merriment at a killing, albeit of a notorious criminal. It's not that I believe that whatever supposed war it is that we're tangled up in will now end. And it's not that I believe America's number one, or that I believe in the USA, USA, USA chants, or any of that sewage. What struck me last night was that those chants, the flags, the singing of that insufferable national anthem all broke out because of this president. We've not seen that before. Up to now, all those props were solely the property of the Reds, Red America. I'm not talking about the 2008 Democratic Convention, which was an extraordinarily well-executed demonstration of political theater, but in the end was a partisan one. The whole thrust of the Red Menace and their case for 10 dark years has been that the country has been united behind them. Well, last night, we actually heard Republicans, including criminal Bush sycophants, praising the president. From Lafayette Park to Lower Manhattan to Boston and out to the rest of the world, people from a variety of political persuasions were saying, "Thank you, Mr. President." And they weren't referring to that bullhorn-wielding, swaggering garbage head. To some of us, it was like watching the grainy broadcast of Neil Armstrong's climb down the ladder with our mouths agape. More in a second here from the Music Factory.
And there's nothing to eat that don't carry the stink of some human waste dumped in the Nile. Well, one thing is certainly true. No one here knows what to do. And I'm sick of you. I'm sick of you.
For the hour, finishing up with the Music Factory, AJ the Music Factory wrote to me the other day. He concludes by saying, "Let the debates about Obama continue, rage even. Let's continue to discuss and have differences about whether or not he's doing a good job on this issue or that. Let the reality sink in about how the United States will continue to wage war, build its empire, and subsequently fail. As the lint balls prepare for their Republican debate this week, as the terrorist network quickly resumes spinning its web of lies, as the Red Menace reflexively minimizes every single aspect of this story, no one can erase the president's accomplishment this week. No one. Remember, one president bragged, pretended to be a cowboy, and disingenuously made promises he wound up not keeping, while the next one soberly did keep them, even paused to graciously acknowledge his undeserving predecessor, and he pulled it off without a single American death. Better dead than red. The Music Factory. Well, there is that aspect of this, isn't it? Isn't there? That was sort of my first reaction. My first reaction was not one of shock and horror. By the way, this hour has been sponsored by Sue Doerr. Her message is simple. Please support your local food bank. A couple of cans, a couple of dollars, or a couple of hours of your time will be appreciated. And Sue, we appreciate your sponsorship. My first thought on hearing this Sunday night when we had come home from, neighborhood street fair in Atlanta. And Bin Laden dead. At first I thought it was a joke. Well, they finally found his corpse someplace, his desiccated last remains, almost mummified. Well, sure he's dead. He's been dead for a long time, right? No, that's not what the story was. But after processing that, I couldn't help but remember this murderous son of a bitch that we had as president the last time. And his, the one who whispered constantly in his ear, well, two of them, Rumsfeld and Cheney, and his posturing and his codpiece and his flying onto the deck of the USS Abraham Lincoln and his mission accomplished. Oh, I know, it was about the war in Iraq that still rages, by the way. And you never hear anything about those 50,000 troops we have there, do you? And there's a reason for that. Corporate media has closed the book on it. Now, it's all about Afghanistan. But I couldn't help but think, well, for whatever reason, Bill Clinton couldn't pull the chain and flush Osama bin Laden, if that was the goal. I mean, Osama bin Laden was one of those irritating sons of bitches who just did not like the fact that U.S. foreign policy had surrounded or encroached upon territories or aspects of his culture that, he just didn't like it. The nerve of him. I mean, the nerve of Osama bin Laden to make demands like to get the hell out of Saudi Arabia, to away from the holy sites of his religion, to stop the torture of the Palestinian people, to stop this, back off, calm down, take a breath, leave us alone. No, that's not how it works, Mr. bin Laden. That's not how it works at all. Look, you and your family have made millions from all sorts of projects involving capitalist enterprises. So, you can't throw up your hands now and say, this kind of capitalism, no good, but my father's kind of capitalism, great. Come on. Especially when you're staring into the eyes of American corporatism. No. Eventually, if you put up resistance, how many examples you want, pal, eventually you will be executed one way or the other. Either people who look like your people will do it or will do it or hired hitmen will do it or you'll never know who did it. But God damn it, bin Laden, don't you? I mean, it's too late now. You're dead. You're sleeping with the fishes or whatever Muslims believe. I don't know. But your big mistake was in confronting American imperialism and aggression. You don't do that. The only people who are allowed to do that are the Chinese. And you, Mr. bin Laden, were not Chinese. So anyway, it's hard to At the very beginning, it was hard to get past that. Well, I'll be goddamn, Barack Obama had Osama bin Laden hunted down and executed with a couple of headshots and a "For God and Country, Geronimo, Geronimo, Geronimo" postscript to the killing. Something that Cheney and Bush and Rumsfeld and the whole U.S. state security system for 10 long years just couldn't seem to pull off. So I get what AJ the Music Factory is saying. I'll see you tomorrow night. Take care. Keep it lit. I'm Mike Malloy.